Welcome to Sensible Health Solutions, the show where we simplify health and wellness. Join your hosts, Haley Fields and Dr. Scott Looper, as they share practical tips and expert insight to help you navigate common ailments, nutrition, and overall well-being. Tune in for straightforward advice that empowers you to live a healthier life.
Hello, Dr. Looper. How are you?
Oh, Haley. I'm doing good. I'm thinking about my patients and the female problems that they have. I have a fair number of patients come see me with hormone problems. And one of the hormone problems that they show up with is, or at least one of the menstrual problems they show up with is related to hormones, is endometriosis. So I want to talk about endometriosis today.
That would be great.
Do you know what endometriosis is?
I know very little about endometriosis, and I do have a few close friends who suffer from it. So I would love to hear.
It's relatively common. About 10 or 15% of women between the ages of 24 and 40, you know, kind of prime menstrual time, have endometriosis.
And it's where the egg fertilizes outside?
No, this is where the endometrium, that's the lining of the uterus, that's where the egg should implant. So what happens, how the whole system works is the uterus grows this blood-rich lining so that the egg has a place to land.
Mm-hmm.
So the egg gets fertilized in the fallopian tube, and then it lands and attaches to the endometrium. Eventually it forms a placenta,
mm-hmm.
and the endometrium combines with the placenta and transfers nutrients. It goes in and grows a baby.
Mm-hmm.
Except for if the implantation doesn't take place, we don't want to leave this rich, you know, tissue that could get infected or whatever. So what the body does is just basically cuts the blood supply off. The tissue dies, it sloughs off, and then you grow a new one again in a month. And so the growth of this is preparation for beginning pregnant, and then the menses is when it didn't work for whatever reason, and we're just going to go ahead and clean it all out.
Yeah, start a new slate.
So endometriosis is when the endometrial lining turns up in places where it shouldn't be. Let's say on the inside of your abdomen, or on the outside of your ovaries, or on your liver, or weirdly enough, it could be just about anywhere in your body.
It'll be anywhere outside of the reproductive system.
Could be in your nose. And what happens is it'll bleed monthly, and you'll get a menstrual flow
through your nose.
Yeah, nose is weird. It's been seen, but I've never seen one. So let's not talk about noses because it's extremely rare. But to get a menstrual flow inside your abdomen, that's common. Remember I told you 10, 15% of women get this? And so they get this flow, blood flow, inside their abdomen. Now,
and then,
here's the thing. Blood, if it's in blood vessels, everybody's happy. It's all hunky-dory. If the blood gets out of the blood vessels, it generates an inflammatory reaction. The body doesn't like blood where it shouldn't be. And so it tries to shut it down and or close it off or wall it off, or it generates the cleaning cells to come in mass and to clean up wherever the blood is. Because the blood's got iron in it. It's got a lot of nutrients in it. If there was a stray bacteria came along and that blood, it could set up shop and grow an infection, and so it's a mess. And so our bodies appropriately want to clean all that up, and that cleaning process is an inflammatory process. So this is misery for a woman.
Yeah.
Every month. You get this horrible pain. Now, some women just get a teeny little speck, and it's like, meh, hardly anything. Those ones are lucky and rare. The more likely woman is going to get enough of this where she's going to get lots of inflammation and can really just absolutely wreck you while it's bleeding, because it bleeds with everything else. It has a cycle. It grows, at a certain point, the hormones change, and then the layer is sloughed off, and now you have this little pool of blood inside your body where it shouldn't be.
Okay.
Okay, now, here's the thing
that
about,
sounds like
about
a
this.
Huge problem.
Oh, it's horrible. Here's the thing that's interesting about this. No one knows why this happens.
Nobody.
Nope.
It's 2025, and we haven't researched it enough.
Nobody's been able to figure out why it happens. Now, the theory is endometrial tissue, instead of flowing out, backflowed. Because the uterus has got these fallopian tubes that attach it. So the menstrual flow should go out, you know, the cervix. Instead, it backs up into the fallopian tubes and leaks out inside.
Mm.
And that's where it comes from. Except for that's not true.
Mm.
Because they've done research to figure out if, first of all, does this actually happen, this retrograde flow? The answer is yes. Hmm? Now, does it seed endometrial cells in places it shouldn't go? The answer is no. And lots of women who have retrograde flow don't have endometriosis. And lots of women with endometriosis don't have retrograde flow. They don't correlate. Now, retrograde flow is a real thing,
yeah,
but does not correlate to endometriosis.
Huh.
Now, you may get some women who happen to have endometriosis and has retrograde flow just because they had two things, and you'd think that would be causational, and it isn't. The math doesn't work out. So no one understands why this happens. Okay?
Okay. So what do you do about it? If you don't know what's breaking down, then how do you know what to fix?
Okay, wait. I don't want to get to the fix yet. Let me talk more about ideas about why this happens.
Okay.
There's a theory, it has not been proven, that those endometrial cells were there all along. That women were born with them in these weird places. They just happened to get seeded in the process of making a baby.
Yeah, well, that kind of happened to me in a different way with my ultravenous malformation, to where my blood vessels just were malformed in utero. And, I mean, they can happen anywhere. They can happen in your brain. They can happen in your skin. They can happen in your digestive system. Mine happened in
your heart.
Or your heart, yep. So they can happen anywhere.
Yeah, it's kind of like a little birth defect, or not so little, depending on where it is.
Right, and so
yeah, same thing.
I'm
cells
kind
in the wrong
of
place.
Yeah, I'm correlating it to a cellular development.
Yeah,
thing.
Cells in the wrong place. That's what it is. Now it makes sense because the endometriosis kicks on. If these cells are there, they're quiet. They're not doing anything. They're not causing any trouble until the hormones kick on, and then they go, "Woohoo! Time for us to get to work!" And they grow, and they start doing their thing on your monthly cycle. And it just happens to be where they got established.
Yeah.
So that doesn't really help us in terms of treatment.
No.
It's an interesting idea.
So
hard
then
to prove.
If that's where they are, then, you know, they slough out every month and then they reoccur in the same place?
Yes.
Okay.
So you think, well, we just go in surgically and take it out. And certainly surgeons do that.
Yeah.
They do that all the time. They'll scrape it. And they'll remove those cells, and now you don't have that little bit of endometriosis. So that does happen. That is a viable treatment, except for the doing the surgeries is inflammatory in and of itself and doesn't necessarily help with the pain. And also, it's hard to get every single little bit of endometrium because even little specks are enough to cause this to be a problem.
Right.
Yeah, there it is. That's the rub.
Ugh.
So I've been successful in treating this. And how I treat it is I treat it by balancing the hormones. This is kind of the show we just did on PMS. That's one of the reasons why we're doing the PMS show and the endometriosis show together, is because the story is almost the same.
Mm-hmm.
What you want to do is you want to balance the estrogen and the progesterone and the other hormones as best you can, and then the endometriosis doesn't become a problem. The blood flow is regulated, and it doesn't really cause any troubles, and the endometriosis just gets better all on its own. So let me explain this. The hormones get cattywampus because not because they're being made incorrectly, but because they're being cleared from the body incorrectly.
Right.
So the part of the body that's responsible for clearing these hormones is the liver. And the liver should, every month, take each one of the estrogen molecules or progesterone molecules that are flowing by and look at them, handle them, and say, is this a good, nice, functional hormone? If it is, woo, throw it back in the bloodstream, let it go. Or this one's kind of funky. It's old, it's warped, it's missing this little piece over on the side. No, we're not going to let this go into circulation anymore. We're going to tag it. We literally attach a molecule to it. The molecule says, do not reabsorb this. And we're going to dump it into the bile. Now, the bile is a tube that flows near the liver cells that when they want to throw something away, boop, they pitch it back in the bile duct.
Mm-hmm.
They exude it into the bile duct and it acts like a sewage flow, right? A ditch.
Yep.
And then down it goes through the ditch. It goes through the tubes, goes into the digestive system. It performs some functions that bile does, which is mostly an aid in our digestion, helps break things down, fats especially. And so our digestion's stronger for having the bile there. And then it gets pooped out. And then we're done. We don't have that hormone to have to worry about anymore. Except the system doesn't work if the liver is overworked, cleaning toxins out of the body, mostly from the digestive system. So if you have an infection in your digestive system, a low-grade infection, that infection is eating your food that's left over. It's taking what it wants, dividing into making more cells, and pooping out the leftovers that it doesn't want.
Yeah.
The residue, right? Mm-hmm. Now, that residue is toxic. The reason why it doesn't want it is because it's bad. It's a toxic residue. And so it poops it out. Except for there is no out in this. It's all in.
Mm-hmm.
So it's in us. And so we absorb some of these toxins. Not all of them. Some of them get bound up in, you know, other bacteria or fiber or other things. So some of them get pooped out. And other ones don't. They get absorbed. Because there's a bunch of stuff that's getting absorbed, gets sucked back up, funneled over to the liver. Now the liver has to deal with not only its own, our crap, but somebody else's crap too,
mm-hmm.
which is the correct term for this stuff. And so the job of regulating hormones gets thrown in the back burner.
Right.
And it's just let to languish. Because you're not going to die because your hormones are cattywampus.
But this
whereas
toxin,
this other stuff is going to kill you, right?
Right.
You got to get on top of this. So it's a matter of priorities. Appropriate. And then eventually the hormones get cattywampus enough that the liver says, ah, this will kill us. So now it's going to have to batch them through. And the hormones that were too high are running now too low. And so there's a surge, and then you get symptoms associated with the surge.
Exhaustion.
A bunch of things. Now, with endometriosis, what happens is the endometrial lining tends to get overbuilt. And then when it breaks, it generates an inflammatory reaction. So if it wasn't for that inflammatory reaction,
you wouldn't have any problem. So an entire system inflammatory reaction, their immune system is compromised, they have...
Not so much immune system.
Okay.
Yeah, you're right. It is immune system.
What I've heard of some of my friends who suffer with this, they just feel like a flu. A very heavy...
Because it's inflammatory.
Yes.
That's what's driving it.
Yes.
Now, where are these inflammatory chemicals coming from? From their immune system.
Mm-hmm.
So you're right, it is immune system. But it's not immune system in the sense of they're fighting infections, though they are. There's usually infections in the digestive system too. Yeah, you're right. It's the way I want to think of it is inflammatory, because without the inflammation, they don't have a problem. With the inflammation, they have a bigger problem, right? Because
mm-hmm.
the inflammation's dialed up. So what we need to do is find the sources of inflammation, that is the infection in their gut, and they always have one. So you clear that out. That helps immensely. Now we need to support the liver to balance the hormones better.
Mm-hmm.
And so we do liver support stuff, which we'll talk about how to do that here in a moment. And that helps a bunch too. And then we go through and specifically look at the hormones. Sometimes the hormones will just fix themselves. Sometimes they don't. Sometimes there's an actual imbalance of hormones. So we'll run a test called a Dutch panel. I like Dutch panel because it checks 50 different things.
Yeah.
It gives me a lot of views into people's hormones. And so then I'm able to go through and get the right balance between the different kinds of hormones. And then their symptoms go away. Okay, so the main thing is in getting the inflammation working better. Second most important thing is getting the liver working better. And the last important thing is getting the hormones to get balanced. And you do all these three things together, and women feel better. It is extremely satisfying.
Regular doctors put them on birth control to moderate these symptoms and side effects?
Yeah. One of the things about birth control is that it's got hormones in it. So one of the reasons why the symptoms manifest is because it's not so much that the hormones get high, though that has something to do with it. But what it's more is they get batched and they go there up and down throughout the month. They go up and down.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you have relatively lower hormones and you're going up and down, the percent change from 100% to 10% to 100% to 10%, that's a huge change.
It's greater.
Now, if you take that same change and you stick it on top of a big pile of hormones, now it's going up and down up here. See that? And the percent change is way less. So the hormones are more balanced. Even though the actual change, the amplitude of the change is the same, in relation to the amount of total hormone, it's much less. And now the symptoms go away.
Right.
And they're like, wow, this is great. Birth control is fabulous.
So they put more hormones into that.
Yeah, except there's the rub. The rub is those hormones are still active, and they stimulate growth. And we don't always want growth when we're adults.
Right, because overgrowth leads to cancer.
Cancer.
Yeah. So I was actually wondering that in the last episode when we talked about PMS was, you know, with patients with more estrogen. I have heard it in men, more estrogen, more risk of prostate cancer. Is that the same thing for females? More estrogen,
more
greater risk?
Breast cancer.
Breast cancer.
Yes.
Okay.
For sure.
Okay.
So a woman's lifetime... lifetime breast cancer risk is associated with their lifetime estrogen exposure.
Okay.
So this makes you really afraid to do birth control, but the birth control is better than it used to be,
mm-hmm.
and they're using smaller and smaller amounts of hormone, and they're figuring out how to get it to work. Now, occasionally it fails, so it's not perfect, but nothing is. So anyways, the hormone tends to be better balanced than it used to be, so it's better tolerated than it used to be. Still, many women feel horrible on birth control.
Yeah, I have heard horror stories.
Yep.
Yeah.
They do happen. And so it's the same kind of thing. If your ability to manage your hormones is compromised based on low-grade infections in your digestive system, based on your liver not working well for whatever reason. You know, it's not just that the liver's overworked. It could be other things going on with your liver as well. You know, blood flow, defects, who knows what, all kinds of stuff. And then those things are going to result in your poor management of hormones.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're going to have symptoms associated with that.
And then you're going to have the backup and the stockpiling of the hormones.
The thing about this is doctors are, you know, they're sensible, intelligent, helpful people, and God bless them, but they tend to be very direct. They see, okay, endometriosis means you have these little blobs of endometria. That is your problem. The endometrius problem, we need to cut it out. We need to get those out. But really, if you could think of the body as a whole, as these inner combined systems that influence each other, and you can, you know, dial down the reactivity of a person in general, then you're going to solve the problem without surgery. And I think that's the A plan. If we can do this without surgery, that's what we should do.
Yeah.
And if we can't, then we'll do surgery. And if we do surgery, we're going to try to do it in such a way to minimize...
A risky and invasive surgery, though.
If you're that miserable, you'll sign up for surgery in a hot second.
Okay.
Yeah, because it's a matter of living hellish misery or having a chance to get better. The problem is that the success rate of the endometrial treatments are not great. Now, if you got a blob, you just have to be lucky you got one blob, you go in, the surgeon cuts that blob out, and then you are cured. I mean, it can be amazingly effective. In the right situation, it's remarkably effective. Unfortunately, that right situation is few and far between. Mm-hmm. Mostly it doesn't go that way. Mostly it's a scattering of endometria, and it's hard to get them all. And then if you do get them all, you're creating these little nicks, lots of inflammation, and it turns out to be misery. And it doesn't even get them all. Now you're more inflamed, and you still have endometriosis, and the surgery was the worst thing you ever did. Now, for us, we see the rejects, the failures. Because if it worked, people are all doing their lives. They're not coming in to see me. The only people who come in to see me are the ones that failed on.
Right.
So I'm prejudiced because I see failure after failure after failure. So I do know that they are successful from time to time, but...
But they don't come to us.
Nope.
And they're successful. So back to treatment. What are some of the things you do? I know you talked a lot about supporting the liver function to process the hormones in our last episode.
Yeah, same thing.
Okay.
So what we want to do is we want to get balance of hormones. That's what we want to do. And we also want to reduce inflammation. So we have to find the source of inflammation. Where's inflammation coming from? Now, the endometria itself is generating some inflammation because there's some bleeding going on. But what we're really getting most of the time is an exaggerated response to that blood. I mean, we get microbleeds in our body all the time, right? You go fall down, hit your knee, you get microbleeds. It's called a bruise.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
It's not necessarily going to take you down in your life, right, because you got a bruise. No, it could. I mean, it's bad enough, right? But mostly it doesn't. Our body manages it, right? So what we want to do is find sources of inflammation and then clear them up. And most of those sources are coming from hidden infections. The two most common places to have those infections are your digestive system and in your sinuses.
Okay.
Could be vaginal too.
Okay.
Could be. So we want to keep an open mind and kind of look around, figure out where they are, and then treat them appropriately. Now with digestive infections, I have to say at this point it's never use antibiotics. I mean, I'm not against antibiotics. Antibiotics are fabulous. They save people's lives all the time. But for digestive infections, they suck.
Yeah.
Because they don't work. They'll treat the infection very well while people are on the antibiotic. When they go off the antibiotic, then the infection comes back. And so I've had people on their fourth or fifth infection come in to see me. They keep doing rounds of antibiotics and different kinds of antibiotics. And we just have a different approach. And we've done shows about this, right? Let me just keep it simple. What we do is a combination of herbs, sometimes probiotics, and mostly prebiotics to alter the environment in the digestive system so that the inappropriate bacteria, the pathogenic bacteria, have nothing to eat. And they die back. Now, if they get eradicated, who cares? If you have 17 bad bacteria, they're teeny little specks, they don't do anything, any harm. If you have 17 billion bad bacteria, now you're riddled with nastiness. And so what you need to do is starve them. That's the most important thing. So how do you starve them? Make sure there's no leftovers. They get into your lower intestine. So you eat food, you chew it up, you digest it all the way, you extract all the nutrients out of that food, so there's nothing left over except for soluble fiber, or insoluble fiber for that matter, fiber. And that's it. There's only fiber left over. Now there's nothing for the bad bacteria to eat.
Good.
So there we go. We clear it up that way. That's the best way to do it. It's not the antibiotics. It's changing the terrain that they live in. You change the terrain.
Not wiping the terrain clear.
Yeah.
Not nuking the terrain, but
weeding. We and I have talked about this before. You could solve your weed problem in your garden by going in there and weeding and fertilizing and planting good flowers and plants and things and creating this ecosystem, right? Or you can get a blowtorch and you can burn it down.
Yeah.
And you burn it down, you're getting rid of the weeds. Weeds are gone.
Mm-hmm.
Except for what's going to grow now? Weeds. You're going to have weeds more than you ever had before.
Yeah, and you didn't really pull up the roots of the weeds. You just took off the top.
That's right. There's plenty more weeds there, and they grow back up, and they're more than they ever were before. That's normally what happens. Okay, so that is the essence of treating endometriosis. Find the sources of inflammation, treat them, clear them up, and then watch people get better.
Mm-hmm.
It's like that. Now, the liver may need some extra help. And so there's some herbs mostly that we do with liver stuff. There's some vitamins that we do with liver stuff. The liver tends to do its job better if it has B vitamins available, B6 especially. It tends to do its job better if it has magnesium available. It tends to do its job better under the influence of bitters.
Okay.
We do Purge the World as a bitter, but there's lots of bitters. Gentian by itself is a bitter. It's a decent bitter. That's Angostura bitters that you get at the grocery store to use to make cocktails out of. Nice. Seriously, it works. It turns out to be a fairly effective way to stimulate your liver to work better. There's lots and lots and lots of other stuff. So let me talk about more about the specific herbs for endometriosis. We talked about these before. Vitex, mm-hmm. which is known as chasteberry, is helpful. The Don Quai and the Simisifuga and all those ones are helpful as well. But there's some extra ones here. Dandelion root is particularly effective to help with this and stimulating the liver.
Okay.
And it's, again, it's a bitter. It's another bitter, but it's a bitter that's more stimulating and more helpful and more supportive to, of your liver than the gentian or some of the other more common bitters. Prickly ash is an herb that is also particularly helpful with this, and mostly what it is an anti-inflammatory. And motherwort, otherwise known as Leonoris, is particularly helpful.
Okay.
And so when we make a formula for endometriosis, it's not going to be the same formula that we do for the PMS. We talked about that in the last show. It's not an identical formula in about half the ingredients. Now, half the ingredients are exactly the same.
Right, yeah.
And the other half is different. And it's more has to do with experience. You know, because if I come up with a concoction and it works, I tend to use that again in the same situation. Now, it's not just me. It's, you know, doctors for all of eternity
sure.
have been doing this.
Yeah, it's
and then the ambitious ones,
pharmaceutical industry.
Yes, right, they write it down.
Yeah.
And then that ends up coming through the literature. So when we're looking as a new doctor for stuff to use, you flip through the books, you talk to doctors, you write stuff down when you're in school and you learn things at work. And then as you go out, you use, you know, those things and maybe add to it. And that's where this list comes from. Probably half of it just stuff I got taught. The other half stuff I've just tried and found out that it works.
And so you've used dandelion root before?
Yes, I have. Lots of times. I like dandelion root.
Okay. Would you recommend that for... We're talking more so for the
endometriosis.
Not for PMS.
No, it's okay for PMS too.
Okay.
It's just that it's not an aid item. It's an A item. It's think about dandelion root. It works very well as an anti-inflammatory, anti-edema. So there's a certain amount of edema that gets generated from
water retention?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Water retention. And so dandelion root has a knack to help the kidneys remove the excess water. And it does so and it by keeping, while it does it, it helps balance your electrolytes. Regular diuretics cause you to
lose your electrolytes.
Yeah, so depending on what
dehydrates you.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it is. Depending on what the diuretic is, depending on what the electrolyte is lost. Most of the time it's potassium. The taraxacum is naturally high in potassium, by the way. So
taraxacum
is nearly every other fruit and vegetable in existence.
Yeah, yeah. And taraxacum was the Latin for dandelion root.
Taraxacum.
Taraxacum.
Yeah, dandelion root, taraxacum. I'm sorry, I mix them together in my head, go back and forth. And so, yeah, it has a knack for helping with endometriosis. Now, the main thing, though, isn't to take, if you're listening and you want to treat your endometriosis, saying, Dr. Luper said I need to take taraxacum. Yeah, that's a minor player, really, when you get down to it. It's reducing inflammation by finding the hidden infections. That is the thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, right, by getting the liver to work better to balance hormones.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Thirdly, by actually balancing the hormones. So if you can reduce the inflammation, then you can actually treat the problem more at the core. And that's another show.
That's another show that we'll have to get to next time, Dr. Luper. Thank you again so much.
Well, I'm really hoping that, you know, ladies listening to this, or even the husbands, can learn something and then take some action and actually clear the problem up.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
Thanks, Haley.
Yes.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Sensible Health Solutions. We hope you found today's discussion enlightening and packed with practical tips to enhance your wellness journey. Remember, small changes can lead to big results. If you enjoyed the episode, don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform. Your feedback helps us bring you the best content possible. Stay connected with us on social media for more health insights and updates. You can find us at Sensible Health Solutions across all social platforms. Until next time, stay sensible and stay healthy.
This content is for informational purposes only and is not a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Seek medical advice from a healthcare professional for any medical conditions.